Chell Anderson is a North Shore naturalist. She lives here in Cook County and joins us periodically to talk about phenology or what's going on in the woods right now. Welcome, Chell.
Hello.
Well, there are several species of fern in our area, and they do things differently from other plants. Explain how.
We have a wonderful array of ferns, more than many other parts of the state, and they represent a very ancient family group of plants that goes back about 360 million years. So of the plant groups that are families that are still with us, this would be one of the most ancient. And they were the first vascular plants, so plants that had some kind of conductive tissue, you know, that allowed them to grow taller and support themselves and leafy branches and so on. But they were the first vascular plants without seeds or fruit. So there were kind of this intermediate step between, you know, the simplest plants that would have been at, like algae, for instance, or mosses, and the most common now plants, which are the seed-producing plants. So whereas the pteridophytes, of which is the group that ferns are a part of, have about 12,000 species today. They, compared to the seed plants, are very small. Seed-bearing plants are the vast majority of plants now, well over 200,000 species. Where they were once kind of the dominant group, they've in many places and in many ways been supplanted by the seed-bearing plants, but they remain a very important part of the flora here.
Well, how do they differ from regular plants? I mean, how do they how do they make more ferns?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question because it's kind of hidden from us in many ways, and it's something definitely to wonder about. All ferns produce spores. That is, in a nutshell, the sexual way in which they do their reproduction. And spores can be found on ferns in a couple of different ways. The vast majority of our ferns have the spores on the fronds, and those fronds that have spores are called the fertile fronds. There may well be sterile fronds in any little, you know, group of ferns coming from the same base. And the spores are typically on the underside of the leaves. And by this time of year, are starting to turn a dark brown. They start out kind of pale green. They may be in lines of dots, what look like dots, or they may be in kind of a continuous line around the edge of the leaflets on the fronds. But if you turn a leaf over, many leaves over, you'll eventually see some of these brown cases. And those are called the sori, and they contain the actual cases that hold the spores. So this is all at a very tiny scale, but there are literally millions of spores on a given frond. As those sporangia, within the cases, the bigger cases, the sori, mature, they become exposed to the air, and the spores continue to develop and ripen inside their little cases. And once they're fully mature and developed, then the cases split open and expose the cases of the spores themselves to the drying effects of the air. Each little case that contains spores is on like a little wand. It's a round blob on a wand. That blob is held together by a ring. It's a locked ring, but as it dries, there's a joint in it. And at the point at which the spores are ripe and mature, and the whole thing gets really dried out, those are the days that these little rings dry to the point where they break apart at the joint, and they spring back and then forward, and they catapult their little case of spores into the wind. The spores are so tiny that they can be carried around long distances by the wind. So they might be initially lifted up on just a little convective current of air into a bigger wind and could end up basically anywhere in the Northland.
This sounds pretty complicated.
It is. It's very complicated, and it's very risky. And that's why we don't have ferns everywhere, because these spores are very tiny. And while they can be dispersed, to land in just the right place where there's enough warmth and moisture, consistent moisture, to be a good spot to go to the next level is really kind of rare. And so they land, And if they land in just the right spot, then they have a chance to do the next part, which is create what's called the gametophyte.
Now, they were doing this 300 million years ago?
They were. And the gametophyte phase is something we wouldn't even recognize as a fern. It's it grows to something about that's heart-shaped, about a quarter of an inch long. It has pseudo-roots that provide a little bit of consistent moisture and nutrients to it, but it's a very small, right at the ground level, heart-shaped. And the male sex organs and the female sex organs are in different places on this little heart-shaped gametophyte, and they're on the underside. There, the triggering thing is moisture. So whereas to disperse the spores, it needs to be very dry so that they have the best chance of getting well dispersed. In order for fertilization to take place of the female parts, which hold the egg, there has to be moisture. If that gametophyte gets moist, then the sperm will be released, and they're little corkscrew-shaped sperm with little cilia that help them swim towards the chimneys, these little chimneys that hold the eggs, the female parts, that are at the other end of this little heart-shaped plant, pseudoplant. And the females' parts are giving off an actual scent that the males are attracted to, the sperm of the males are attracted to. And so they swim quickly towards these little chimneys. And the first one that gets to an egg gets there, fertilizes the egg, and then everything shuts down.
This sounds almost like they're not plants, but like they're, you know, animals. How do they, I mean, this is all going on just because it goes on.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no thought involved. We're talking plant, right?
We're talking plants. That's right. But we think of plants as very sedentary and, you know, static, but they're really not. These clear categories between plants and animals, but that's really not the real world. There's really all kinds of gray area in between. There are things that act like plants sometimes and as animals other times, and things that do both plant-like things and animal-like things.
So think continuum as opposed to segments.
Precisely.
Chell Anderson, botanist and plant ecologist, thanks for helping us look at ferns in an entirely different way.
You're welcome.